This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the June 8, 2012 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. I'm Natalie Pinchem. I will be reading a summary of some of the articles published by the JNS today. Topics covered in this podcast are epilepsy, vascular disorders, spontaneous intracranial hypotension syndrome, diffusion tensor imaging, and pituitary surgery. Seizure outcome and complications following hypothalamic hamartoma treatment in adults, endoscopic, open, and gamma knife procedures. A clinical article by Cornelia Dries and colleagues. This article presents outcome data on a uniquely large collection of adult patients who underwent interventions to remove hypothalamic hamartomas. These rare malformations can be missed in adults because of the often small size and peculiar clinical presentation of the lesions. Usually, the reason to pursue hypothalamic hamartoma removal is drug-resistant epilepsy with typical gelastic seizures, so-called laughing seizures, during which the patient laughs involuntarily. Treatment options are endoscopic or open resections or gamma knife surgery. A search of the institution's prospective database revealed 40 adult patients. Their preoperative clinical profile and postoperative seizure control, complications, and hormonal status were analyzed. All had intractable seizures. The hypothalamic hamartoma location was inside the third ventricle in most patients, and the median volume was 0.54 centimeters cubed. 26 patients underwent an endoscopic procedure. 10 had a transcolosal or other open resection. 4 chose gamma knife surgery. 29% of patients became seizure-free, and overall, a majority of patients reported greater than 90% seizure improvement. The only significant favorable prognostic factor for seizure-free outcome was the absence of mental retardation. The mortality rate was relatively high at 10%. Other important morbidities included persistent hormonal disturbances and weight gain. Comparing results reported in the literature, adults undergoing hypothalamic hamartoma treatment do not fare as well as children, but there is often significant improvement. Endoscopic indocyanine green video angiography in aneurysm surgery, an innovative method for intraoperative assessment of blood flow in vasculature hidden from microscopic view. A technical note by Yoshihisa Nishiyama and co-workers. One of the major causes of poor outcomes after surgical treatment of intracranial aneurysms is vascular occlusion or stenosis. Intraoperative fluorescence video angiography using indocyanine green has been widely used for real-time assessment of arterial flow to avoid these complications. This is a simple and useful method to confirm complete occlusion of the aneurysm lumen and preservation of blood flow in the arteries around the aneurysm. However, the observation field of fluorescence video angiography is limited under a microscope, and it is difficult to confirm the flow in the arteries behind the parent arteries or aneurysm. The authors developed a new technique of intraoperative endoscopic indocyanine green video angiography to assess the blood flow of arteries that are not directly visible under the microscope. During the clip placement procedure, the endoscope was inserted to confirm aneurysm occlusion. Then indocyanine green was intravenously administered, and the fluorescence in the vessels was observed through the endoscope as well as under the microscope. The usefulness of this method to lessen operative morbidity related to vascular occlusion is illustrated through descriptions of three cases in this article. Diagnostic yield of computed tomography angiography and magnetic resonance angiography in patients with catheter angiography negative subarachnoid hemorrhage. A clinical article by Josser Delgado Almandoz and co-authors. Comprehensive evaluation of patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage is important because patients left with untreated vascular lesions could rehemorrhage in the short term and suffer increased morbidity and mortality. This study demonstrates that although catheter angiography remains the gold standard for the evaluation of this patient population, computed tomography angiography has become a very valuable complementary technique for those patients in whom the initial catheter angiogram does not reveal an underlying vascular origin. In this study, computed tomography angiography demonstrated a causative aneurysm in 9.3% of patients with non-perimesencephalic subarachnoid hemorrhage, in whom catheter angiography did not demonstrate a cause for the hemorrhage. Thus, performing both types of examinations in patients with negative initial catheter angiograms may be indicated. Diagnostic value of the optic nerve sheath subarachnoid space in patients with intracranial hypotension syndrome. A clinical article by Nobuyasu Takeuchi and colleagues. The diagnosis of spontaneous intracranial hypotension syndrome is based on the symptom of postural headache and characteristic MRI findings, such as dural enhancement. However, the clinical spectrum is surprisingly varied, and this variation may lead to initial misdiagnosis, which in turn results in significant treatment delay. The subarachnoid space in the optic nerve sheath is affected by changes in intracranial pressure. If a reduction in this space reflects decreased cerebrospinal fluid pressure, it could provide direct evidence of spontaneous intracranial hypertension and may be useful in early diagnosis of the disorder. In this study, the authors investigated the clinical value of the optic nerve sheath subarachnoid space measurement in the diagnosis of spontaneous intracranial hypertension and in follow-up evaluation. They performed MRI of the orbit in 15 patients with spontaneous intracranial hypotension before and after treatment, and found that the size of the subarachnoid space in the optic nerve sheath correlated significantly with CSF opening pressure measured by lumbar puncture. Moreover, the size of the subarachnoid space increased in many patients after effective treatment. The authors found that disappearance of the CSF space in the optic nerve sheath was frequently observed in patients with spontaneous intracranial hypertension before treatment. They conclude that this characteristic finding may be useful in the diagnosis of spontaneous intracranial hypertension, as well as in the evaluation of treatment effectiveness. Influence of hemodynamics on recanalization of totally occluded intracranial aneurysms. A patient-specific, Computational Fluid Dynamic Simulation Study. A laboratory investigation by Chuanhui Li and co-workers. Some totally occluded intracranial aneurysms undergo a process of recurrence, and the role of hemodynamic mechanisms in this process remains to be elucidated. The authors retrospectively analyzed the local hemodynamic characteristics at the aneurysm neck before and after total embolization. The authors demonstrated that in totally embolized aneurysms undergoing later recanalization, the wall shear stress at the aneurysm neck was significantly higher than those at the original aneurysm neck before embolization. This finding suggests that higher wall shear stress at the aneurysm neck after total embolization can be an important hemodynamic factor that contributes to post-treatment aneurysm recurrence. Elevated diffusion anisotropy in gray matter and the degree of brain compression, a clinical article by Satoru Osuka and co-authors. Diffusion tensor imaging is a novel magnetic resonance imaging technique that can provide information about the microstructural properties of compressed tissue. In this study, the authors evaluated whether diffusion tensor imaging can define the degree of tissue compression precisely in patients with chronic subdural hematoma. The study sample was composed of 18 patients with unilateral chronic subdural hematoma and 12 age-matched volunteers. Diffusion tensor imaging results were acquired before and after the surgical irrigation in the chronic subdural hematoma group. The authors also measured subdural pressure during the operation. Fractional anisotropy values of the gray matter were increased in the patients with chronic subdural hematoma compared with a control group. The gap between fractional anisotropy data before and after the surgery correlated with the subdural pressure. Furthermore, the increased fractional anisotropy values in patients with chronic subdural hematoma diminished after the surgery. In conclusion, these findings indicate that the fractional anisotropy values of the gray matter may be important markers of tissue compression. The assessment of fractional anisotropy values of the gray matter will result in a new, less invasive diagnostic technique to evaluate the degree of brain compression. Retinotopic organization of the visual cortex before and after decompression of the optic chiasm in a patient with pituitary macroadenoma. A case report by Philippe Chouinard and colleagues. Visual loss can arise in patients with pituitary tumors as a result of tumor compression on the optic chiasm between the retina and the visual cortex. To optimize the clinical management and surgical decision-making for patients with pituitary adenomas, a better understanding is needed of the relationship between the effect of compression on neural activity in the visual cortex and the decline and eventual recovery of visual function. The authors used functional magnetic resonance imaging to examine how the visual cortex processes retinal input in a patient with a pituitary tumor before and after surgical intervention. After surgery, the visual pathways were no longer compressed, and visual input once again flowed from the retina to the brain. Mapping of the visual cortex demonstrated the recruitment of the visual cortex after decompression of the optic chiasm, which matched gains in visual field perimetry. The author study demonstrates how functional magnetic resonance imaging can be used to illustrate the downstream effects on the visual cortex when distal compression of the visual pathway is present. They show the usefulness of functional magnetic resonance imaging for determining, on a case-by-case basis, how the brain processes visual information and how neural reorganization in the visual cortex can occur after surgical intervention. Thank you for listening. Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group podcasts are contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook. To read articles published this week in any of our journals or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org.